Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Join us every Saturday for a deep discussion about the biggest stories of the week. Go behind the scenes with journalists, political figures, and newsmakers to get a unique look at our city. And also, I want to hear from you, the listener. So please send any questions, critiques, or sponsorship inquiries to my email at hsanders@wweek.com. Thank you so much and enjoy this episode of the Dive Podcast. Welcome back to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. It's great to have you with us today on October 16th for episode 42 of the podcast. We are talking today all about pot. This week's show brings you an interview with freelance writer Brianna Wheeler. She's here to talk to us about her article, which was one of a series of articles that made up Willamette Week's cover story this week, all about marijuana in Portland. But before we get to our interview with Brianna, we have a duty to uphold, which is to bring to you all of the headlines, everything that happened in Portland this week. This is the 90 Second News Flash. Guys, we have a terrific reporter at Willamette Week. You know her if you've been listening to more than one episode of the Dive Podcast, and that is a reporter by the name of Tess Risky. And she has been tracking the false criminal charge against City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty closer than anyone in the state. Just a quick recap. So on March 4th of 2021, a woman called 911 saying that she had been a victim of a hit and run and that she was certain that the person who had committed the hit and run was none other than City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. It turned out that this was an incorrect call. It was not Joanne Hardesty. But the problem is that the claim was, while it was incorrect, it was leaked to the media and the Oregonian and other publications reported on it. So the Portland police opened up an investigation into seeing who was the cause of the leak, why this was leaked out to the media in the first place, and we have not heard back as to what is the result of that investigation. Risky reminds us week in, week out, saying that it has been over 200 days since the investigation was opened. And if you also remember, you can go back a few episodes to our interview with Mayor Wheeler, who actually criticized Tess's work and criticized her taking a weekly tally of this investigation and saying that we will find out soon, these things take time. Well, evidently, it seems to be taking way more time than anything like this has to be taking. It seems like they want to sweep things under the rug. That's just my idea of why this is taking so long. But Tess is going to keep on it. Don't worry, we got our best people on it. She is tracking this week in, week out, how many days are passing since the investigation was first opened into this case and what has been going on since then. No word, but we'll keep you updated. If you thought that we were done talking about Tess, then you are incorrect, because I want to turn it over to Tess to have her explain the story that she's been working on, all about body cameras in Portland police. Let's talk to Tess. So Tess, please tell us about your story about Portland police having to wear body cameras.
So for several years now, Portland City Council has tried and failed to implement body cameras for Portland police officers. And there's a few different reasons for that that aren't really worth getting into the details of right now. But so the most recent development in that whole situation is that the city is in mediation currently with the U.S. Department of Justice for a settlement agreement that it had signed off on in 2014 due to a pattern of and practice of using excessive force against people with mental illness. So earlier this year, the city was found to be out of compliance with that settlement agreement. So that is why currently the parties are in mediation to remedy the situation. And so one of the proposed remedies is to implement body cameras for PPB officers. So that push from the DOJ paired with the union, the police union, or the Portland Police Association, which it's officially called, those two entities are both advocating for body cameras. And it seems like now that's created almost like this perfect storm where city council is finally ready to fund the purchase of body cameras. So we now know that according to Mayor Ted Wheeler's office, they are going to propose a $2.6 million plan to fund the purchase of body cameras, and that they are almost certainly going to vote on this before the year is up.
Thank you for that, Tess. Let's stay with our 90-second news flash, and I bring you the next story. In the least surprising news of all time, it looks like Nick Kristof, who is an Oregon native and a New York Times columnist, is maybe, probably, definitely running for governor of Oregon. He filed papers with the Secretary of State's office that are required in order to raise and spend money, you know, fundraising money. We will be covering this race very closely. I'm sure a lot of other media organizations will be as well, but we will be having all of the candidates, as many as we can, on our podcast to talk about their vision. So please, if you want to hear from the horse's mouth, the horse being the people running for governor, then stick around to this podcast because we've got a lineup of people who are running for governor and want to give you their opinions on what they would do if they get your vote. Portland City Commissioner Dan Ryan has three people who are trying to unseat him in the upcoming election. One is named Jamila Dozier, and she is a program coordinator with the city's Housing Bureau. Another is Avraham Cox, who is a recent high school graduate from Benson. And lastly is Brandon Farley, who is a far-right videographer. Not sure I would call this the stiffest competition in the world, maybe, but hey, I can be shocked. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. In sad news, the co-founder of one of Portland's biggest success stories, Widening Kennedy, has died. David Kennedy, who founded the agency with Dan Wyden, has passed away at the age of 82. Thoughts and prayers with the family. Widening Kennedy is an amazing force in the advertising world. Our Wednesday edition always has you set up with the best places to eat and drink in our city, curated by the people who know the ins and outs of Portland the best. So if you need a perfect date spot or a new spot to try out, go to that list first. But I do want to take a second with this. Now, my editor won't like me doing this, and I almost never do this, but I'm going to go out of Willamette Week's reporting just to point out that the New York Times made a list of the 50 best restaurants in our country, and two places from Portland made the list. One is Eam PDX, and the other is Coqueen. So try those out. If you haven't, give them a shot. If you have, I mean, congrats to them for making us proud, making Portland proud. According to New York Times reporters, these are two of the best spots in our country. I mean, I think you can add any number of Portland restaurants to that list. So congrats to all the chefs out there, especially at those two places for that list. Well, folks, thank you so much for listening. This has been the 90 Second News Flash. We now turn to our interview with Brianna Wheeler. Brianna is a freelance journalist here in Portland, and she wrote one of the articles that was a portion of this week's Willamette Week cover story. Her article is about how you can get the most sustainable and most ethically sourced marijuana. Let's listen to our interview with Brianna. Okay, Brianna, you wrote an article in this week's cover story, along with several other articles, all about pot in Portland specifically, and you talked about ethically sourced pot. What does that mean?
When we talk about ethically sourced pot, we're talking about a couple of different things. We're talking about a quality of weed. We're talking about a quality of land stewardship by the farms. And we're talking about the quality of life for the people who work on the farms.
It's funny because if you had asked me to depict somebody who was growing marijuana just a few years ago, maybe when I was in high school, my visualization was of somebody doing it under, you know, very secretive, like Illuminati type conditions. but now we think of it just as the same way as somebody who grows kale or somebody who grows hops for beer. So how much of the market that Portland has for weed, how much of that is still in like a black market, traditionally, you know, like a narcos type scenario?
Oof. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
I can't speak to that specifically, but I do know that overwhelmingly our cannabis industry is like, it's enviable. Other states look to us. So like, while there is like a lot of black market, like shady stuff going on, overwhelmingly, like our cannabis culture is something to be like admired by other states. Like we set a standard and we set it with the quality of our weed, the quality of life for our workers overall. And like how we steward our land.
What went into writing this article? I know you wrote a couple. You wrote one about the best strains of weed. I want to focus more on the ethical nature of the weed, because I imagine the first one was just smoking a shit ton of weed. Is that right?
That's my jam. Yes.
Okay. So the second one, I want to ask, how did you get under the, you know, inside the community of the weed manufacturers to figure out what's ethical and what's not?
I interviewed like 7 or 8 people, like big, long. I only had a week to write this, but I interviewed so many people. And there are people that I had met, that I'd made friends with at different events. So I've met lots of trimmers. I'm also like really active in cannabis communities of color, like writers of color, cultivators of color, dispensary owners of color. Like we're all part of a network where we're always just trying to lift each other up, give each other space, give each other flowers. So being involved with those communities gives me more of an insight than just like, I'm getting high and I know weed because I get high and I shop for it. So I'm always listening to their stories and I'm asking them questions. And for this story in particular, I wanted to talk about labor rights. I wanted to talk about the nitty gritty. I wanted the horror stories. I didn't want to paint like some kind of whistleblower picture, but I wanted to push for like more transparency in the industry, because even as awesome as we are, there's always room for improvement, especially when the entire industry, like nationwide, is going to be looking at us because we are standard setters.
Brianna, you talked about 7 sources, 8 sources for this one article. Through all of this, what was most eye-opening when you finally wrote the last line? What did you learn the most?
This community is so committed to this plant. It is heartwarming. Oh my goodness. It put me in like a beautiful headspace when I was done, because initially you hear stories, and that was going into this. I was basing my perception on like the stories that I had heard, and you like party stories are almost always horror stories, you know? But when I'm sitting there and people have a chance to tell me what they really think about the industry, how they really think we could do better, where they're coming from is a place of such love.
Yeah,
I don't think that it compares to others.
Yeah, Justin Bieber says that he gets his weed from California in one of his latest hits. Should he be talking about Portland? Is Portland better than Washington and better than Colorado and California?
I think so. I mean, I'll die on that hill. But I also think that it's low-key, like Oregon is kind of cannabis's best kept secret.
How do you tell if your weed is ethically sourced and done the right way, like you were describing?
Just a super easy way is to check out what they're doing on social media. Like super easy gateway to this type of sleuthing about weed. What are they doing on Instagram? What are they posting? Are they posting stacks of money? Are they posting pictures of their new cars? Big fat frosty nugs? Or are they posting like love letters to their employees? Are they talking about community initiatives that they're a part of? After the conversations that we were having this time last year about cannabis, are they maintaining that energy on their social media? Or is it just, was it all performative? Those are the things that you can look for.
And you're talking about the protests around George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. That's what you're referring to?
Yeah. The equity part.
Was it just for show or what, or are they keeping it up?
Correct.
You've talked a lot about the benefits of legalizing marijuana. Not only in Oregon, we've seen these benefits, but other states, whether it's tax revenue or decriminalizing, something that people say is, you know, definitely should be decriminalized. But then on the other side, you know, obviously there's always going to be the stiffs who are like, don't ever, it's a drug, don't legalize it. But there is the argument that, you know, where will the line get stopped, right? We're going to just keep pushing it, right? First, we legalize weed, then what's next? And we've seen this in Oregon with legalizing some form of medicinal mushrooms. And, you know, I'm not making any comment on that. I don't know enough about it to make a comment on that. But I want you to know, I want you to tell me, where do you see this going? Do you think that, hey, we just want weed legalized and that's all that matters? Do you think that there's other things in the drug community that aren't looked at the right way?
Oh, totally. I think that like, and it's going to be interesting to watch Oregon for the next couple of years because of the decriminalization that just occurred. I would champion decriminalization across the board. And all of that, all the funds that are tied up in that BS poured back into the communities that it has affected.
Across the board, meaning cocaine,
heroin, crack, All of it. And I'm not saying like, woohoo, let's go run out, everybody do crack. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that like,
but if you legalize it, you know what I mean? Like legalizing it means go do it because, you know what I mean? Because it's legal, right?
Well, legalizing and decriminalizing, two different things.
So you're talking just about decriminalizing.
Correct. I'm saying that it wouldn't be a crime anymore to be an addict. Addiction would not be criminalized. And that way our communities could focus on supporting the root causes of addiction as opposed to punishing addiction, which is just like a spiral that we're never going to get out of.
We went deeper today than I thought we were going to. So let's bring it back. Let's bring it back a little bit lighter. No, I appreciate it. But let's bring it back and let's, for the last question, let's give out your awards, Brianna's awards for the most ethical boutique shop that you can go to in Portland and the least ethical.
Oh, I can't say least ethical. They're going to drag me online. But I will say best. Okay. So most ethical weed shop. You know, Fire Cannabis, they have a brick and mortar. And I recently had an awesome meeting with the operations manager there. And she like broke it down so good. Their hiring practices, how they promote from within, how they deal with their used soil. I mean, she was like really laying it down, and she was laying it down in a way that she wants to set an example. So I love Fire Cannabis. Also Loud, LOWD.
There we go.
That's all I have to say about that.
That's all we have to say. And that's our time. Brianna, thank you so much. It was awesome.
Thank you so much, Hank, for having me. So fun.
Of course. Anytime. Bye. Well, folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Dive. We will catch you next week for episode 43. Now, no spoilers, not going to give anything away, but next week has the potential to be a top 5 episode. That's all I'm saying. I'm leaving it there. Till then, stay safe, have fun, keep reading. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. Take care. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. Includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been The Dive Podcast.